And good morning. Thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018, first Wednesday in May. And you, thanks for joining us here for the morning show today. And it's another beautiful day. And I'm Susie Perez, along with my co-host.
I'm Chris Bessler, sitting over here in the co-host chair. Susie, how are you?
I'm fine. It's thanks for being here, Chris. We have a special 2018 primary local decision candidates group here today. We have the Republican candidates for position of Bonner County Commissioner, District 3. And we'll just say good morning. Good morning, Carol Koonsman.
Good morning.
And good morning, Dan McDonald.
Good morning, Susie.
Incumbent candidate. We will get to looking at how you stand on different issues, but first, the weather.
The weather.
The weather from the National Weather Service.
That's what we all have in common, Susie.
Okay. currently, we have 41 degrees. It is mostly clear. Let's see. My little thing is not quite there. Mm-hmm. Okay, there we go. Patchy fog and then partly sunny today, high of 63. Tonight, low of 43, mostly clear. Thursday and Friday, since it looks pretty much the same, mostly sunny and partly sunny, highs of 69, 71. And lows those evenings are 47 and 45. Going into the weekend, we have slight chance of showers. Good news. So enjoy these beautiful days coming up.
And I'll mention a couple other things going on outside. The sunrise this morning was at 5:26 a.m. It's going to set tonight just a little after 8 p.m. In the past week, we've gained 23 minutes of daylight per day. That's always good news for us. And I don't know if you've been looking up in the sky, but we've been getting some great shows at night because Jupiter is this really bright star out there. Jupiter is in opposition to us right now. That means the sun's shining on it fully, and it's making quite a neat sight, along with the moon, which is now waning. So I suggest if you get a clear sky, I think we will have them the last couple nights. Check it out at night. So it's looking pretty cool out there. And other things going on around town real briefly?
Well, I know that next Tuesday night, KRFY, The Reader, and Sandpoint Online are having another candidates forum.
Yeah.
And I think it's the last one because all of us want our listeners and our fellow citizens to be informed voters. And I think we're getting a lot of information and it's very important.
And that's Tuesday, May 8th at the Sandpoint High School Auditorium. The forum's going to start at 5:30. It's going to run till around 7:30 unless these candidates just have too much to say. We might go a little longer.
And KRFY will be streaming.
Yes, KRFY will be broadcasting.
Actually broadcasting live.
And Sandpoint Online is setting up a video stream that you'll be able to see online as well.
How fun.
So there's going to be a lot of ways to check it out. Of course, the best way is to come in person, see these candidates, take their measure, and decide how you want to vote in the primary. A couple other things going on around town really quick. Sandpoint Farmers Market kicks off for the season on Saturday, May 5th. So check that out. There's a good place to get starts if you're a gardener, and there's always neat art things. They have music, and that happens from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday. The other thing that's going on big this weekend, I think, is the Cinco de Mayo celebration that is being held at Trinity on Saturday evening, and that is a benefit for a couple of different groups in town. So if you want to have a Cinco de Mayo party, that's a good place to go. And with that, it is time to get on to today's topic. Again, we're talking with Bonner County Commissioner District 3 candidates, Dan McDonald, the incumbent, and Carol Koonsman. These are the candidates for the Republican nomination. The winner of this primary race is going to face the Democratic challenger, Steve Lockwood, in the November general election. Because Steve is unopposed in the primary, he's not included here, but we will be interviewing the candidates for all the contested races in the run-up to the November election. So we'll be coming back to that. And I want to mention one more thing before we get to questions here. I heard through the grapevine it might be your birthday today, Dan.
No, it's not. It's not until June, but that's
not until June. Okay. All right. Well, the grapevine was wrong.
That'd be a nice surprise, though.
It's not. You shouldn't believe everything you see on the
there you
internet.
Go. Did you read it on Facebook?
Because we all somebody told me that as I was walking out the door.
Oh.
Now, to get started, you each get an open mic here for about a minute and a half. And it's an opportunity just to introduce yourself, tell a bit about your background and qualifications. And we'd like you to answer one question there with the question, why are you running for public office? Dan, you want to kick off?
Sure. My name is Dan McDonald. I'm your current District 3 Commissioner. I've been Commissioner since January 9th of 2017, so a year and almost 5 months. In my former life, before becoming a public servant, I was a commercial roof consultant. I managed a number of multi-million dollar projects, ran a large corporation for a period of time, and I decided to run because I saw some things in the county government that I thought were kind of going the wrong direction. And I knew I had the expertise and the experience to come in and make some serious changes. I've done that. We've cut the budget, as everyone's heard, by $8.799 million and change. We brought a lot more efficiency to government, which is good. And by the way, that's the first time county government budget's ever been cut that we've been able to find. Also brought in a procurement person. Shockingly enough, about the 35 different departments we'd never bought collectively. And we've saved, I think, close to $600,000 in the first 7 months just by buying collectively. So really what I'm doing is applying common business principles to government, which actually works in a lot of ways. Certainly there's no profit motive other than trying to save money as opposed to make a profit. But the sound business practices actually have been great for the people of Bonner County, and I'm really proud of what we've done.
Okay. Thank you, Dan McDonald. Same for you, Carol. You get about a minute and a half to introduce yourself, tell a bit about your background, and answer the question everybody wants to know is, why are you running?
Hi, I'm Carol Koonsman, and I am running for the commissioner's job. My background is varied. I was in the corporate world for many years, and I had great jobs with great responsibility. I was an administrator at Hughes Aircraft with many people under me. I had a high security clearance background that gave me access to classified areas. And when you work in classified areas, you have to learn how to get along with everyone because people don't come in and out of those positions. You have to be there behind closed doors. I also owned four different businesses. I had a preschool up here, and many of my children now are in their 20s and married. And oh my gosh, it's so hard to run into them at the grocery store and see them. I was the mayor of Pondere for 8 years. I'm very proud of that. And that gave me government experience. I also was on the city council for 5 years. And I think my track record of working with people and being very respectful of what other people's opinions are, whether you agree or not, has been a very good learning experience for me. I'm running because I believe people have a choice. Elections shouldn't just be handed to people. And in the United States, that's what we do. I have the time and the commitment, and I also have the experience. And I just believe that we should have a choice, and that's why I'm running.
Right. Thank you, Carol Koonsman.
Okay, well, I guess we will start with Carol. Are we going back and forth, Chris?
Yeah, we want to rotate who answers things first, yes.
Last week we had three people in, and I got a little confused going around in a circle. But so now we'd like you to describe the top three issues you believe are most important in the county commissioner position job and what is on the agenda as important issues.
Well, I think that the top three for me, and I think most people would agree, are obviously roads and transportation, because we live in rural areas, and so many of us are, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a paved road where I live, but a lot of people have to put up with gravel roads or just the dirt roads. We can't possibly pave every road in this county. That is never going to happen. We're just too big. But we can maintain them, and we have a great road and bridge department that does that for us. I think also natural resources. We live in a beautiful place, and we have to be good stewards of that. High-speed internet and broadband for many people in this county cannot be connected. I mean, you can just drive down certain places, and you're losing your cell phone service. A lot of people lose their landlines. And if we had high-speed internet and broadband, I think a lot more people and businesses would profit from that and benefit. leadership to me is very important, and I think that there's different styles of leadership, and I think to get a lot of things done, you have to be able to hear what people have to say and understand that we all are not going to agree, but we can agree to disagree. So,
well, thank you, Carol. And Dan, same question.
You know, I think first and foremost and kind of the catch-all is customer service. Government's never really been known for good customer service. And we've actually been putting our employees through customer service training because we hear the complaints. We get a lot of calls from people that, I wasn't really treated well in this department or that department. And to the credit of the folks that work for the county who truly like their job and like doing what they're doing, we've seen a drastic change. We're actually getting compliments from our planning department and compliments from Road and Bridge. Roads certainly are a huge issue. It's one of the biggest departments we have in the county. And our Road and Bridge folks do a great job. We actually changed the way they go about roads. We were doing a lot of road building before I came into office, and the problem was we were neglecting maintenance. When I say maintenance, it's not just grading the roads, but it's dealing with the ditches and culverts and all that. And if you remember last spring when I first came into office, we had a lot of culverts that were blowing up, a lot of roads that were getting damaged because that maintenance hadn't been done. So we've refocused on maintenance, because without good maintenance, your good roads become bad roads pretty quickly. And it's a huge waste of taxpayer dollars. And then, of course, speaking of dollars, obviously being financially sound, when I first came into office, one of the first things I looked at was, or I actually had done it before I got into office, but realized that we were in a financially hard position. The previous budget was upwards of $65 million. If we wouldn't have done a spending freeze to hold over $10 million, it would have been $75 million. And our revenues are only $49 million. So you can see how that's kind of off balance. And as a county, we really can't run a deficit. So if we wouldn't have made the cuts that we made, and we made those cuts without cutting services, but if we wouldn't have, we would have had to gone out for a special levy over and above the 3% we were allowed to take. So without sound finances, everything else is for naught.
Okay, and actually, you jumped on our next question here, so we'll just start out with there and give Carol a chance to address this as well. But to you first, Dan, you feel the county has struck the correct balance between taxes and services, and you just mentioned some of the places you found to cut. If you would aim at reducing taxes, are there specific services that you would eliminate?
Actually, there were no services we had to eliminate. I found a great deal of fluff in the budgets, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Road and Bridge, which is one of the largest budgets outside of the all-encompassing justice, which includes everything from sheriffs to the courthouse. We found items like gas and diesel every year. They budgeted $550,000 a year for the last 5 years. When you look at their actual five-year actuals, they were only around $125,000. So we were able to knock it down to about $150,000 to give them a little bit of a buffer and save quite a bit there. And we found a lot of that throughout. And it was the old way of doing budgeting that the county had done forever, the baseline budgeting model. Where if I've got this much, the next year I have to ask for that much more. And it's one of the biggest challenges is to constantly be pulling back on the reins because government naturally wants to grow. I think we've done a great job with not cutting services while at the same time getting the budget in line. And with the new inventory coming on, we may reach a point, possibly not this year, but next year we'll be absolutely balanced.
Okay.
So just a follow-up question. So with finding the extra money as a commissioner group, you didn't have to raise taxes?
We had to take the 3%. We absolutely had to because of the place we were left with. Again, we were left with a $65 million worth of expenditures, and if we just kept it static, it would have stayed at 65 or 75 if we hadn't have saved the 10. With our revenues only being 49, we still had to take the 3%. We may have to take the 3% again this year only because we're still running behind. We're $57 million. This year with 49 in income, I think we're going to end up probably somewhere around 51 or 52 this next year with the new inventory and new construction that's come on and with valuation increases. So it'll give us the opportunity to possibly balance this year, but probably not until next year.
And point of clarification, the state allows a 3% increase.
Right. Yes. That's the max you can take. And
Without going to a special election.
Right. And we were actually facing a special election, which nobody likes to sound or a special levy, and no one likes the sound of that. And we weren't for that. So,
Okay. Carol, same question to you. Do you feel the county has struck the correct balance between taxes and services? And And if you would look to reduce the tax load, are there specific services that you would eliminate?
Well, the former commissioners, I don't want to say anything about sitting commissioners or former commissioners, but the budgets have been different every single term. And I don't know that I agree with some of the things that went on before, and I'm not sure that I agree with some of the things that are that have happened now. I think they're doing trying to do the best they can. I think a lot of the figures that I've heard, I've just, you know, I it just goes up and down as to how much savings, and I try to get a good answer from Mr. Rosedale, and I walked away shaking my head. I don't understand. I understand budgets, but I don't understand how they are coming up with a lot of the savings. I agree that if you can make these changes and savings, that's a great thing because it's taxpayer money. You want to get the best bang for your buck with their money. So in that instance, yeah, it's a good thing. The other thing I'd like to remark on is the customer service. That's an excellent idea. And we started that in our city when I took over because it was always no, no, no. And people would come in and be frustrated. Anything you can do to help the public understand the process of government and the procedures, that's the best thing you can do. And they're absolutely correct in allowing that to happen and encouraging that. So, yeah.
And if I could build on that really quick, one of the things we point to is solving problems, not saying, hey, you have a problem. Seriously, you have a problem, so have a good day. We've said, listen, look for solutions. People come to us all the time needing help. Find a way to help them.
Well, okay. It's in the true spirit of public service.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's what you do.
Servant. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So what were you going to say, Chris?
Oh, I was just going to follow up with Carol. Is just how do you inspire that kind of, put the customer first attitude from county employees?
Well, I think you give them the opportunity. You know, I think that I don't know how it was before. I think people just get in a rut and they just get used to saying no. You know, and that just didn't work for me. And I found people walking away, and I'm talking from a city perspective because obviously I'm not in the county yet. Every dealing that I had with the county, I never had a bad experience, but that's not to say other people didn't. And I know there were certain departments that were not people friendly, and I think they've become people friendly. And so if you encourage your employees that you don't want to hear that word no, or you don't want to hear rudeness, you know, and be explaining to them what the processes are. That's the right thing to do.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We're going to start, Dan, next question. I think, which way are we going, Chris? I'm not paying.
yeah, I think the next one came to me.
The first one.
You get the next one here, okay.
Oh, no, wait, well, whatever.
No.
But wait.
No one's keeping track. So we'll go with Dan. How do you feel the county is doing in maintenance and construction of county roads? And are you satisfied or would you be looking to bring changes in road and bridge operations?
Well, we're continually looking for better ways to approach, especially maintenance. Although I got to hand it to our road and bridge crew, these guys, we gave them a challenge and they all rose to the challenge. They've been fantastic. In fact, if you look at even snow plowing last year, where other public entities were having a difficult time keeping up, our guys were just on the ball. We had a storm right around Christmas time where it started snowing on Thursday. It stopped snowing on Saturday by 2 a.m. By Saturday at 11 a.m., every single road in the county was plowed and open. It takes a lot of overtime, takes a lot of hard work. These guys really have to suck it up and make it happen, and they do. I mean, we had guys that were working at, a 10-hour shift, sleeping for 2 hours, working another 10-hour shift. And, it's great. We have good people. I just, my hat's off to those guys.
Okay, Carol, same question. Would you like me to repeat that?
Oh, no. I would just say that I think anybody who works for Road and Bridge probably has the hardest job that we have because the safety issues and how they have to get out in the crack of, dark 30 and keep these roads clean for us. We're very fortunate up here on how well that's run. I have no complaints about Road and Bridge.
Okay, moving on to a question about planning, and it starts with you, Carol. This winter, the commissioners approved a natural resource plan for the county. It's a 95-page document that generally advocates for multiple uses on public lands. Supporters say it's a tool to give the county a say about the use of state and federal lands, but opponents thought it lacked a diversity of viewpoints and criticized the process. What was your feeling about institution of this new natural resources plan?
I think the people who worked on that plan worked for many years. I think that they did the job that they felt comfortable with. I went to a couple of the meetings. I read it. I didn't believe that some of the things that were in there were of value, but I believe that it's... I'm kind of tongue-tied about this because I don't think it had really any teeth to it, and I wasn't exactly sure of where they were going. But, it passed. Commissioners wanted that, and that's what I have to say about that.
Okay. Dan, same question to you. Obviously, you're the commissioner, and you did approve it, so... give us your feelings on the plan and the process as well.
Okay. First of all, the reason for the plan is because under the 30-year-old federal law, under coordination, the federal government is required to coordinate with local public entities, cities, states, and what have you. But the only way you can coordinate is if you actually have a document. So you have to have a plan to present to them and say, okay, here's our plan. Here's our desire. Now, our desire doesn't mean we get what we want. It's like my children. They can ask, but they don't always get what they want. Now they're grown, but anyway, and they've never stopped asking, by the way. But that's the basis for that, was to come up with a plan that of this is what we'd love to see if it were a perfect world. With respect to transparency, we actually added two extra hearings just to make sure that we got all the comments in. We increased the period for submitting changes to 45 days from 30 days. We really went out of our way to make sure everyone was heard. And if you came to the natural resources meeting after we'd received all those changes, they actually made about 15 changes to the document based on comments by Idaho Conservation League and what have you. And so the group was very straightforward about being transparent and listening. And we wanted to make sure that everyone knew that we were hearing them.
I have a quick question. Dan, you just mentioned that it was a starting point, this plan that the commissioners approved after a process with public input. What's the next step? You're saying the state then looks at it and...
Actually, it's the feds that look at it. This is a coordination document with the federal government, primarily dealing with public lands. And really, in a nutshell, what it is the feds want to come in and let's say they have like the bear management unit that they're proposing up in the Grouse Creek area. What's the county's views of road closures? What do you want to see? What do you want to see as far as land closures or not, or harvest rates and those type of things? So it's any kind of an interaction with the federal government when they go to do a project within the borders of Bonner County. We don't have any authority, of course, outside that. But it's our intent, of course. We want access. We want people to have access to the forest. So if they're going to close down roads, it's a concern. However, the federal government's budget trumps what we want. So as far as giving us any real authority, it doesn't. All it does is it gives us a seat at the table.
A starting point.
Yeah, so we can have a conversation.
Thank you. And we're going to start with the next question with Dan. The county is considering a series of land use code amendments that critics say would provide amnesty to landowners who did not follow the rules and divided their parcels in violation of minimum lot sizes, among other changes. Do you support or oppose these changes and the idea of amnesty in general?
So, a lot of the changes were merely clerical changes. The big one, the amnesty, which is really should be named grandfathering, has to do with the 2008 comp plan. So in 2008, the county came up with the comp plan, and a lot of good people worked very hard on it, and they came up with a new zoning map. But what we had was we had lots that were legally split prior to that new zoning map, completely legal lots people could build on and people could get building location permits. Then when they overlaid the new zoning, it suddenly made them illegal. Now, there should have been a provision to grandfather just those in up into that 2008 period and no more. And so we're going back trying to correct that. With the comp plan, even though folks worked really hard on it, we found a great number of back doors that have created some real problems where we're seeing agricultural land getting swallowed up in development, which we don't want to see. Once you lose ag land, you never get it back. I had a good friend that had a lived on a piece of property next to a chunk of ag land. And next thing you know, because of a loophole, there's a house being put up right next to his on a field that was a productive hay field. So we're concerned about that. And that's one of the reasons we're looking at these comp changes, to make sure we fill those loopholes and don't allow developers to come in and do development where there shouldn't be.
Thank you. And Carol, the same question.
Well,
what you understand at this point.
Oh, well, I understand comp plans, and I know that they're living, breathing, and they there's a purpose for them. And if you make changes to them, the changes should be for the best. If you're making the changes for the wrong reason, you can get yourself into some real troubling issues. I have not been involved in the particular process that Dan has been talking about, but I am attending the P&Z subcommittees and the meeting that's going to be held. I believe it's next week. And I know the people who are on the committees, and I think they're good people trying to do the best. And these are decisions that aren't always easy. And if you have to go back and change things that were a mistake as in grandfathering, there is a purpose to that. So, and I do agree about the ag. If you have just developers nilly-willy going all across the county, that's not a hot ticket.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. I want to remind our listeners that this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris and Susie. And we're speaking this morning with the candidates for Bonner County Commissioner District 3, Dan McDonald, the incumbent, and Carol Kuntzman, the challenger. These are the Republican candidates that will be on the ballot come May 15th for the primary election. So, next question here. I think it goes to you first, Dan. County commissioners decided to place an advisory vote on the ballot that's just coming up next two weeks, asking if voters favor or oppose wilderness designation for the Scotchman Peaks Roldis area. Do you support or oppose the wilderness designation yourself?
I oppose the wilderness designation as it currently sits. And you and I had this discussion before, but we actually tried to create, I met with a group of folks in Clark Fork and Hope that were against it. And they said, we don't want to see anything. And I said, well, you really can't go there. These people have been working on this for 12 years. We need to find a compromise ground. So we created a starting point for a compromise that we thought was really good. It protected the hiking trail, made it wheelless, protected the scenic peaks, gave a great buffer zone, really everything that the Friends of Scotchman Peaks said they wanted, and they flatly rejected it, which I was kind of saddened by, because I thought, since this is public land, that all the public should kind of be involved. So what we were left with was coming up with an advisory vote, because one of the things I heard consistently was there's overwhelming support for Scotchman's as it's written now. I think it's yet to be gauged. And even Rish now is kind of stepping back from it, saying, well, it's not my plan. So I was kind of shocked by his statement.
Senator Rish is the one that's bringing it into the Congress as a potential.
And we thought the compromise plan was a great plan, or at least a good starting point to negotiate, but we couldn't get the Friends of Scotchman's Peak back to the table.
Okay, follow-up question. Let's say the vote goes against your personal stand on this issue. Mm-hmm. Would you work for or against the majority opinion comes out of the vote?
Right. I'm on the record as saying, however the vote goes, that's what I will support. I will support the will of the people. That's kind of my job.
Okay. So. Same question to you, Carol. Do you support or oppose the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness?
I support it, and I also believe the advisory vote is a good thing, because that allows people in the whole county to decide what they want, because not everybody lives in Clark Fork that uses it. And I understand it's a hot topic. I find it, it's an interesting thing. We'll see what happens, but I don't quite understand why, if it's an advisory vote, there's an ad on the radio that is Mr. McDonald's voice opposing it. So I think if you want the people to make a choice, you should step back ethically and let them make a choice. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I respond?
Yes, you may. Hang on just one second, though. Same follow-up question to you, Carol. If the vote goes against your personal opinion, will you work for or against that? The majority's opinion on this.
I would not work against the majority's opinion. I think that's why you send it to the people. So they were correct in allowing it to go to the people. Mm-hmm. So, I would support whatever the outcome is.
Okay, Dan, you can jump in.
So one of the things, first of all, as an elected official, you don't lose your free speech rights or your ability to have an opinion. Secondly, one of the onuses we put on both sides, the for and against, was that we weren't going to put out a voter pamphlet. We weren't going to try to influence. In fact, we even gauged the language so it was so neutral. In fact, if anything, it leans more towards the Scotchman, in favor of Scotchman, than anything. But we told both groups in our meeting, said, listen, it's up to you guys to go out and educate the people, and it's up to you guys to make your case. As far as me doing an ad on the radio, I just happen to be a radio person, as you two are, and so I was asked to do it, and I said, sure.
Okay. Do you want to follow up on that, Carol?
Well, my personal opinion is as a sitting commissioner who put this on the ballot, you should not be doing the radio ad. And I know he's got a great radio voice, but it's...
Thank you.
It wasn't, in my opinion, the right thing to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So we're going to move on to another topic. And we're going to start with Carol. Do you support or oppose the silicon smelter that is proposed for just across the border in Newport, Washington, and upwind of a wide swath of county, and has raised concerns over potential pollution and increased risk of truck traffic?
Well, this is another one of those subjects, and it brings people out, either pro or con. My opinion, and I'm stressing my opinion, is no, I do not want that smelter any more than I would want a mine down the road or anything else that has the possibility of creating or causing a problem for people who live in this area. Yes, I know that it's a Washington State issue, and yes, I know HITEST has to go forward with a permitting process, and I know that it's just a very contentious subject. But I think most of us, if we were truthful, do not want to live where there's anything that's going to create a problem. And I don't want to hear oops coming out of the smelter if it was actually built. The one thing I'm thankful for is that we know about it, because if it had been 100 miles to the west, we wouldn't know this was going on. And how would people be able to even have an opinion? So it is a Washington State issue. I don't think the commissioners can do much about it other than keep Boise apprised and come forward and say, no, we don't want it.
Thank you. And Dan, same question. Okay. Do you support or oppose the silicon smelter?
Well, for a sitting commissioner, sitting elected official, it's not that easy. Anything we say has the potential for liability. As a commissioner, you are bound under the law to go through findings of fact and conclusions of law. The legal process is the permitting process. Now, once we have those facts, then we can take a position. That's one of the reasons why we haven't taken a position, because I can point to Valley County down in southern Idaho, who had a similar situation, and there was a very vocal group of people opposed to this manufacturing plant coming in. Now, keep in mind, their yearly budget's $7 million. Instead of following the law, they went with the vocal folks that were opposed to it and ruled against it. They were sued for $9 million and lost, and the plant still went in. So it's important that we're responsible enough. I don't have the luxury Carol has, unfortunately, to voice my personal opinion. What I have to do is wait for the facts to come in. And once they come in, then if it's outside the bounds for either individual or collective emissions, or if the transportation plan doesn't work, then we can actually stand based on findings of fact and conclusions of law, and we'll stand opposed.
I just wanted to clarify, you say you don't have the ability to voice your personal opinion, mm-hmm. although you do voice your personal opinion on Scotchman's Peak.
Right, because they're two different issues, two mm-hmm. completely different issues.
Is one it because of, them is of a, the potential of litigation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, anytime you're dealing with this is really a land issue for the most part. In fact, one of the things I told one of the groups opposed to it, I said, listen, focus on zoning. Really where your win here is, if you want to defeat it, is in zoning. Stay focused on that. Don't attack public officials, because the Ponderay County Commissioners will be the ones making the final decision. Don't put out information that's not necessarily factual or relate to this type of smelter. Stick to the zoning. That's where I think they actually have a case, and they can do it legally.
Carol, you have a little more time on this question if you want to revisit anything.
Well, not really. I mean, I think I've been pretty straightforward on it. I came from an area where, You know, we lived with all kinds of things in the air quality, and I moved here for a reason. Those people who have lived here all their life, they're so fortunate. But I don't want to see anything up here that's going to create a problem. And yes, I do have the luxury of standing up and saying, no, I don't want it. And so I'm not going off, going on to some of the things that I've heard that it may cause. I'm not, you know, I don't know what would happen if it's put into place. I just don't want it.
Period. Well, and I think safely I could say that nobody wants dirty air or dirty water.
Nope.
But you can look at the paper mill over in Newport. The emissions coming out of that, according to the modeling, are 10 times what the smelter would put out. And that's been here for 40 years. So we've got to look at facts. I try not to, and Chris, you know me well enough, I think, to know that I try not to look at emotion when it comes to this. I look at facts. And as a commissioner, you have to. You get in trouble if you start putting emotion into it. But nobody wants dirty air or dirty water. And hopefully when the process goes through, if it even goes through, we haven't seen that they've filed yet, then we'll know. But what people don't know is that I've been in contact with Washington Department of Ecology, Idaho DEQ. Those are the two regulatory agencies. I've spoken with almost all the nominees for governor, lieutenant governor nominees about it. Our own representatives from here about it as well, and voiced my concerns that, listen, we really need to keep a close eye on this. I want to make sure that if whatever happens, that we're on the bubble, and they're all really watching it closely.
I just wanted to clarify real quick. So you're saying that the paper mill in Newport is giving off more particulates than mm-hmm. the smelter will if it's up and running.
Right. We got emissions modeling from Washington Department of Ecology and Idaho DEQ that showed comparatives from local industry. They took a region around our area, and I think it was a 100-mile region, and looked at a bunch of the different types of manufacturing processes, everything from timber mills to the pulp mill. The smelter really, if the modeling's correct, is minuscule compared to those.
Okay. Well, we don't have enough science to know exactly
right.
what's going to
happen.
And
that'll come in the permitting process.
Yes. The permit hasn't actually even been
right.
filed yet, so there are a lot of questions mm-hmm. about what the Silicon project is even going to consist of in the end. But here's a similar question. It goes to you first, Dan. Speaking of air and water pollution, or at least the potential, do you support or oppose the proposed Rock Creek mine in Montana, which is just across the border? Again, it's just upriver of Lake Ponderé, and there are concerns about its potential to pollute the lake with mining effluent and heavy metals. Support or oppose that one?
I support it, and I'll tell you why. I've sat through two long presentations, one by Rock Creek and one by the Rock Creek opposition. What you find is the process they're using for tailings produces offcast. Literally, the water coming out of there is cleaner than the water in this Clark work. The EPA has a full-time office there. They're constantly monitoring. I think it's Heckler that's running it now. They're doing a great job of it. When you have water coming out of the mine that's cleaner than the water that's in the Clark work, I think they're doing a pretty good job. And we need mining. The microphones, electronics in here, your cars, your phone, your computer, those all require mining.
Okay. I will point out that Hecla's CEO just got named a bad actor in Montana. That's raised some additional concerns.
Does that mean he's not good on stage? Or
could be.
In following through.
And there's nothing without risk.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. We have nothing that we can do energy-wise, mineral-wise, that comes without any sort of risk. But the best we can do is try to mitigate the risk. And they've done a really good job of it.
Okay, same question to you, Carol. Support or oppose the proposed Rock Creek mine that's just upstream of Lake Ponderé?
I have not been to any Rock Creek meetings. My personal opinion is, again, a personal opinion. I think there is definitely a place for mining. The problem is in the past behavior of a lot of mines, not necessarily Rock Creek, they have not been good stewards of the land. They leave disastrous results wherever they go. They're not forced to clean up. Yes, the EPA and DEQ and everyone involved supposedly is better handling it now, but that's not necessarily true. And maybe Rock Creek is behaving themselves, but again, I don't want to hear oops. You know, that's what it comes down to. I don't want to hear an oops. So,
thank you. We're going to move on to something that might look like it doesn't affect the county, but I will explain it further. Recently, just as of yesterday, a citizens initiative well, it came to completion to put Medicaid expansion on the November ballot as a question. And this affects the county, and that Medicare expansion question has come up because there are 62,000 Idahoans who fall into the Medicaid gap. Medicaid, mm-hmm. if I said carrot, I meant Medicaid. So the question is, it affects the county in two ways. We have citizens right here right now who fall into that gap mm-hmm. and who are not covered by insurance. And it also affects the county in the fact that taxpayers' money pays for the shortfall when they go to emergency. It's called the Indigent Fund, and it may have another name officially. But we'll start with Carol. What is your stand on that as far as the importance to have that for our citizens, to have that Medicaid expansion? And I guess that's the question.
Well, thank you. One of my first meet and greets, this question was proposed to me, and I had no idea. And I was a little embarrassed to say, I'm sorry, I don't know about this. And it was explained, and I signed the petition right then and there. And I think that it needs to be on the ballot. I also met with Luke Mayville, who has been the one behind this, putting it together. And I do think it's a money saver for the county. And I think we are getting hit twice because of it. So this would help if it gets on the ballot, and it would help those people who do fall in the gap, which is a residual effect of Obamacare. So.
Okay.
Same question, Dan.
Okay. I'm opposed to it, and I'll tell you why. Because it's an all or nothing. I think there's a lot better options out there, and one of the things that shocks me about the state is that we're not looking at all the things on the table. If you look at Medicaid and Medicare, as a matter of fact, what they are really are, they're market modifiers for healthcare costs. Every time you expand Medicaid, healthcare costs go up because of the way Medicaid pays out, the way Medicare pays out. Medicare, for instance, for every dollar we put into Medicare, we get $5 worth of services back. How long is that going to last? Medicare basically does the same thing to a much larger degree. And so what happens is it actually increases the cost of healthcare. One of the reasons we're seeing more people on indigent care at the county is not because there's more people that qualify based on income. It's because the cost of healthcare is continuing to skyrocket due primarily to some of the problems with Obamacare. So what we need is a better option. And there are a number of different options out there that I can't believe they're not being entertained. One is to go to like an auto insurance program in the state through our state insurance commissioner and say, listen, every insurance company in Idaho has to take some what would be assigned risk. People that have, you know, more health issues or chronic health issues. And that gets folded into the overall cost of all the insured folks. Even some of the clinics we've seen springing up, they take cash only and they don't use insurance. You can get an MRI for hundreds of dollars as opposed to, you know, 20,000. I think there's better options that don't become market multipliers and make insurance expensive for everybody.
Speaking of better options, I think this on the state level, they've been trying to figure that out. But the question is, why not in the meantime, until we do figure it out? We're talking about the working poor who do not qualify for Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, ACA, and they don't qualify for Medicaid on the low end. Mm-hmm. So these people don't have medical insurance. They can lose their homes. Why not in the meantime? And just case in point, obviously I've been reading about it, but in Montana, they have saved over $1 million in just the first few months of taking the federal money for the Medicaid gap and expanding Medicaid for the people who mm-hmm. cannot afford insurance at any cost. They're barely able to pay their rent. So the question becomes, and I've heard someone else say this, why not take it until something better comes up? Because it really, for the first year or so, doesn't cost anything.
Well, yeah, the state of Montana,
very little.
The state of Montana has saved money, but it's come at the expense of all the other people that have insurance. And this is where we have a problem. Obamacare basically did that. You actually saw more people falling off of Obamacare because of the rapidly increasing prices of healthcare and the increasing prices of coverage that were due, in fact, to the market modifiers that Obamacare was. I think there's a more intelligent approach. The easy answer is, let's just throw money at it. The problem is that answer never actually works out in the end. It actually hurts more people.
Well, the truth is we've already thrown money at it because
right.
we are paying those taxes to the federal mm-hmm. government. And why wouldn't Idaho take that obviously I'm for it.
Sure.
But I'm not here for that reason. I'm really just here to continue the conversation of why not take it. And we don't have to finish the question.
Well, and since we've thrown money at it, why make the same mistake again?
Yeah.
Let's look for a better solution. I think the state can do it if they just, they had a number of people that came in with great alternatives and they just shut them down. And it's unfortunate.
Well, I'll jump in and give Carol an opportunity to weigh in once more on this one. So what does happen at the county level is the county ends up having to help finance the indigent folks that go to the emergency room and incur expenses that fall back on the county. Any other way you would see as a commissioner to deal with that, since the state has, the legislature has consistently put deciding this Medicaid gap issue off over the past, I think, three legislative sessions. They just have talked about it, but they haven't decided to deal with it.
I think putting it on the ballot is the biggest thing that we can do. And I think that the people down in Boise have got to start listening to what's going on, because we are paying, we're double paying on this. And it's very sad. When we live in an area where there's a lot of poverty and a lot of working poor, and it's we're either going to pay one way or we're going to pay another. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, on to the next question. And this was emailed in from a listener, actually. And I think, Carol, you're first on this one. Burlington Northern Santa Fe is preparing to build a second railroad bridge across Lake Pend'Oreille. Generally speaking, do you support or oppose this bridge? And I guess the way that it probably comes down to locals getting involved, would you support asking the U.S. Coast Guard and the Army Corps of Engineers to issue a full environmental impact statement on this project before it gets started?
This is a tough one. I am support of the bridge. And the reason for that, you can sit at any crossing and see the length of these trains and how long it's taking at these crossings. There's a safety issue. And this is a bottleneck. Every train coming from east or going west passes right over that lake. It's also a huge safety issue, a natural security issue. We need those trains to go through. It keeps a lot of trucks off of the roads. And I think the Coast Guard and the
the Army Corps.
The Army Corps. That's up to them. But working with Burlington Northern is aware of the safety issues. They're very, very good at keeping on top of that. They're one of the best. And I don't know if that, I know there's a lot of people who want that EIS, I think it's EIS, right?
Yes.
I'm not sure where I stand on that particular part of it. I think that is super costly. It takes a lot of years to get that going, and I'm not sure what the answer is,
Okay. Same question to you, Dan. Generally speaking, do you support or oppose the bridge? And then the second part that the listener put forward, would you support asking for a full environmental impact statement?
So I support it. And one of the reasons I do is a great number of calls we get at varying times a year are about trains blocking intersections, EMS not being able to access areas. We had one down on the other side of the Long Bridge down south, and actually in Algoma area, where there was an oxygen delivery trying to get to a patient. And there's a train blocking an intersection. Now, the upside of that is Burlington Northern has been a great taxpayer in Bonner County. And listen to what we had to say. I could pick up the phone and call, and they broke the train immediately. So they get through. They broke the train for school buses. They typically do that. The problem we have is, as Carol said, is that we've got three lines that come into one line that go across a single lane bridge. And then beyond that, when you get down towards Kokala, that goes back to two lanes again. We need to fix that, because it's far worse to have trains sitting here idling in Bonner County, blocking intersections, than it is to have them moving through.
Yep.
Trains are a great thing. I mean, each train represents anywhere from 250 to 280 trucks which we wouldn't want those every 20 minutes coming through the county. Mm-hmm. So I think it's our best mode of transportation. It's the most ecologically sensitive mode of transportation. And I think the bridge is great. As far as the EIS goes, it's really up to the regulatory agencies like Army Corps. And if Army Corps believes there's an issue, then I'm sure they would call for it. But the thing to keep in mind is that the railroad has owned that easement across the lake and throughout the state before the state was even a state. So they're just doing what they need to do over their property to be more efficient.
That is absolutely true. Absolutely. They own the ground the bridge would be on. And I think the average person up here, if we don't understand where the railroad stands in this country, we are sadly mistaken. They are a great asset to this country, and especially through here. I mean, everybody knows about this. I do also want to go off on the safety issues that Dan's talking about. It's correct. If you are on the other end of a 911 call and you need help, and you have the emergency people sitting 14 to 20 minutes waiting to get across, that's crazy. We are looking at people losing their lives. And then you also have the aspect of people who don't want to wait for the train. So a lot of these crossings don't have the double gates. People trying to make a run for it. I mean, it's an accident waiting to happen. And so we do need that bridge.
Yeah, there's probably a bigger conversation to be had about unguarded crossings throughout the county, because we have 50 or 60 of them, I think, that don't even have crossing guards, and that in itself is an issue. But
have you ever been on the High Line where they take you on a railroad and you are actually in a vehicle that goes across?
No.
If you go on one of those trips, if you're fortunate enough to do that, that is eye-opening, and you see just how dangerous it is out there. For the train engineers and also for the public, it is amazing.
Okay, we're going to ask a very quick question. And to you first, Carol, this one has come up from some voters over the course of the last, well, probably forever. Do you feel the current Board of Commissioners are maintaining open processes and transparency in conducting the public's business?
I would hope so. I mean, legally, that's what your job is. I haven't been to all of their meetings. I think there's some confusion in the public about transparency. I think part of that is just frustration that people don't understand the rules and what commissioners have to abide by. I've been to a lot of the meetings, and I haven't been to all of them, obviously. As far as I can see so far, that they have been held correctly. I think that people don't get involved in public government until it affects them. And then when it does, they're not always real happy with us. And so it's just an educational process. And, you know, meetings are posted. There's rules and laws that you have to follow in government. And as far as I can see, yes, you know, they have been followed correctly.
Okay. Same question to you, Dan?
Yeah, we're required by law under the open meeting law, and it's a very stringent law that really governs what we can and can't do. And if we step outside of that, we can actually be fined personally, not as a county. So if I step outside of it, the first infraction, I think, is a $200 fine. The next one's a $1,200 fine. So we're very, very careful. Now, I know previous boards have had issues. There's rumors of issues, and I've witnessed some things. But we are really running this by the book, because I don't want someone coming back and saying, hey, you're making backroom deals or whatever. So, yeah, we definitely follow it. Now, what we have done over and above that is we are required by law to advertise meetings in certain areas, in the paper and, you know, at the courthouse and at our building. We've actually gone above and beyond. We've created a Facebook site because Facebook's become so popular. We post there. We post on our website as well. So we really go above and beyond to make sure everyone knows when we're having meetings, whether they're regular business meetings or hearings or workshops. And I really feel that we've been, and other people have said this as well, we've been the most transparent board that the county's seen. So. Mm-hmm.
And I'll throw my two cents, is that the citizens also have a responsibility to pay attention for these things when they're coming up and get involved in the process as well.
Before instead of after.
Yep.
All right. So we have about 4 minutes left. So you each get about 2 minutes to have.
Better make that a minute and a half.
Can I take a nap during my
open mic, but feel free to address the question, why should people vote for you? Dan, you may go first.
I've got a proven track record. I made a number of promises when I ran 2 years ago, and by August of last year, I had completed all my campaign promises, and of course now I've gone above and beyond. I left a really good paying job with extremely flexible hours that, you know, I didn't have to have this job. I didn't need this job. In fact, my wife sometimes thinks there might be something wrong with me for taking this job. But I did it out of a sense of service. I've got a background of service in the community, a background with charity work. And I really thought I could make a difference. And I think I have made a difference. I've done what I said I was going to do. And I think I deserve everyone's support on May 15th.
Thank you. And Carol.
Well, this has been a really great experience. This has been one of the best job interviews I've ever gone out for. I also believe that my passion and what I'm good at is public service, and I have great leadership skills. I proved that when I was the mayor of Ponderé. Ponderé made huge leaps and bounds of just becoming a place on the map instead of the stepsister of Sandpoint. We had many, many things that we did. I'm very proud of the spot bus. I talk about it all the time. I think it's one of the best projects that we've had, and there's many more, and we're going to run out of time, I'm sure. So thank you, and you know, May 15th, I would love to be the next sitting commissioner, so thank you.
Well, we want to thank Dan McDonald, our incumbent commissioner, and Carol Koonsman, challenger, for coming in today and speaking on the air here at 88.5 KRFY for the morning show. And Chris, do you have final words?
I just want to throw out that we are having a candidates forum next Tuesday, May 8th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. At the high school in the high school auditorium. You'd have your chance to come and meet these folks and ask them the hard questions that we didn't get to here today.
Oh, please don't.
So we really are encouraging people to come and take part in the candidates forum as well. That will be broadcast live right here on 88.5 KRFY. And we're going to be streaming it online at sandpointonline.com, so you can get some video and some audio if the internet gods permit. So we hope you'll put that on your calendar for next Tuesday.
And vote on May 15th. We're going to remind you that tomorrow's morning show with Jack and Jim, their guests will be Bonner County Food Bank, Community Food Bank Director Debbie Love. And we're going to go out with a song by John Prine. It's just a little bit of the song. It's called Souvenirs. He's singing it with Steve Goodman, who I think wrote the song. And we hope everyone has a great day. Thanks again for coming in with us, Carol and Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.